Welcome to the Agile Revolution. I'm Renee, and today with me I have my co-guest host, Craig. And today we have got a special guest, straight from the YOW conference. We've got Josh Kariewski.
Perfect.
And Josh, you've been presenting two different conference items. Is it, were you planning to present two?
No, actually there was a scheduled opening, and so I volunteered to give a speech about the subject I'm very passionate about these days. So that's how it turned out. I gave two speeches.
So one, the unplanned one, was Lean Startups.
Yes, Lean Startup. It's you know, a lot cooler than Agile, in my opinion, these days, and it's what we've all been moving towards.
Is it the new shiny?
Well, it's definitely got a lot of meat to it. I mean, it's got some significant stuff that, to my mind, takes you to a new level of agility.
Okay.
What do you think's driven that whole lean startup idea?
Well, I think mostly the problem of not building the right thing. Right? You can use Agile and you can use particularly XP to build, you know, finely crafted, finely refactored software with good test coverage and continuously deploy it or continuously integrate it. But are you building the right thing? Are you building something people actually use, people enjoy using? Are you going to have a successful business with that? That's not so clear from Agile. It doesn't really address those issues to my mind. And Lean Startup squarely hits that problem. You know, it just addresses it beautifully.
So how does it address it so much better than Agile?
Well, it basically says, first of all, you know, you have to treat software development as a hypothesis, that you don't really know what to build.
Yep.
And you need to be, you know, not only just communicating with your customers, but measuring them, setting up hypotheses, little tests, and seeing what happens, trying to work in an extremely capital-efficient way, where you might not write any code. You might just do the fake something in the most realistic way possible, but it would give you the kind of rapid feedback you need to decide, should we actually invest in building this? So it's very common to do all kinds of lean UX style moves, where you one company that I described faked an entire Facebook application by just using a Grease Monkey script. And they were able to get 50 people into the room and get feedback from them about, you know, did they like this? And it would have cost a lot of money to actually have built that full-fledged Facebook, you know, add-in, hundreds of thousands of dollars, or at least millions of dollars. They didn't build it. They faked it. They got the data they needed and told them that people didn't really like that. And so they pivoted to the next idea and tried more experiments with that and pivoted again and again until about the fourth or fifth time they really found something. And only then did they start applying some more of the rigorous sort of XP approaches. And, you know, that's one example of many where, you know, I'm seeing that there's a tremendous focus on the right metrics, the metrics that Agile doesn't really talk about those metrics too much.
Yeah.
It doesn't focus on them. There's a concept in Eric Ries's Lean Startup called validated learning, where you are completely focused on finding out as quickly as possible, you know, what you need to learn about some feature or some product in general, and you have to validate it. You can't just sort of say, well, we think they need this. You have to actually validate it, which means it's getting scientific. You need some evidence to show that, yes, indeed, people are, you know, going to do this, going to use it, not going to use it. They love it, they hate it, somewhere in between, we don't know.
Mm.
And we've been applying that ourselves lately. So when we build a feature for our e-learning product, we make an e-learning product that helps people learn TDD and refactoring and stuff like that. And, you know, for us, it's been a fairly successful product, but we have to look for the ugliness, right? Everyone wants to say, well, my baby's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've had three beautiful daughters, and, you know, I look at every one of them, I'm like, wow, she's gorgeous, you know. But we don't tend to look at our software products and say, that's ugly. We want to feel that they're beautiful. And so we don't even want to look at the ugly parts. Lean Startup kind of forces you to look at those metrics that aren't vanity metrics. They're not things that make you feel good. They're things that are reality. You know, are people using that feature that you just spent, you know, a month and a half building? Are they using it?
Mm.
If they are using it, are they having problems using it? Can the usability show us that there's some difficulties they're running into? Things like that. So we instrument more than ever these days. We instrument the everything we build. And prior to even instrumentation, we think through the hypothesis. You know, if we build a resume feature so that when you log into the e-learning and you hit the resume button, you'll go to your last location, are people going to use it? Well, we've been getting requests for it. So, you know, we're not going completely on a guess to build it, you know.
Yeah.
But let's build it in such a way that we can measure of the number of people that come into the site and log in, how many of them actually click there? What percentage on a regular basis? And I can go into my site right now and find that percentage and see, you know, it's somewhere near 40% of the time people are clicking on it. It's solid, validated learning that resume is a key, you know, capability of the system. That is one part of Lean Startup that I really like a lot.
Do you think it's the almost like the perfect storm? Like the one thing that I picked up when I flicked through Eric Ries's book, and it's my holiday reading to go you know, to actually go and read it in full. But you know, I listened to Mary. I've heard Mary talk about a lot of these kind of concepts for years in the lean space, and obviously the you know even you know the guys who wrote the manifesto. You think about the pragmatic programmers. You know all those guys that have been around, and everyone who's sort of been in this industry. We've all kind of known about this stuff. We've all talked about good metrics, and you know maybe they haven't made them way into the formal Scrum and those type of things. So I'm just wondering, is it the perfect storm that things like just the way our economy is right now, plus the fact that the technology's got better, plus the fact that you know people have kind of been at least open to change? Do you think that's kind of led the fact that now we can have the conversation about the Lean Startup?
Well, I think you know for Eric Ries at least, and the folks that he worked with at that startup company called IMVU, you know, they felt that they were doing agile. They felt that they were doing the latest, coolest, smartest way to build software, and it led them astray. It did not lead them towards the kind of results they wanted. So they definitely started bringing in lean concepts, you know, five whys, doing that very rigorously. But ultimately, I think some of the ideas that came about out of it were driven just by need. I mean, they wanted to be successful. He'd already had some major failures, like any good entrepreneur. And it was time to, you know, see success there. Now, I mean, I look at myself. I've been doing XP, agile software development, you know, since the late 1990s. And prior to that, I've been in the software development field since the 80s. Why didn't I just magically do some of the things that Lean Startup talks about? Well, again, it's and I knew about Lean. We've been doing Kanban. We've been doing continuous flow. We've dropped a lot of the old habits of traditional agile. Mainly because we started to see first, well, we know we have to experiment and continue to improve our process. But so that made us better at getting software out the door. In fact, it culminated with our implementation of continuous deployment a couple of years ago. Wonderful. Now we can get software out the door faster and faster. But we still hadn't addressed that ugly baby stuff, which is, are we building the right thing? And also, are we targeting the happiness of the right people? Right. I mean, if you start to look at these non-vanity metrics, the metrics that don't make you look too good, like usage of our product even, right? Then we started to say, well, how can usage sometimes be low in certain contexts? Certain companies have high usage. Many of them don't have high usage. And what is that? We started doing surveys. We started getting out of the building, as Steve Blank says, the author of Four Steps to the Epiphany. Get out of the building. Go out there and communicate with people and learn about them. And we discovered, my gosh, there was so much we didn't know about our own customers. It was incredible. One time, we were working with this statistics quantitative person. She said to me, Josh, what's the most popular day of the week that people use your e-learning? And I said, well, I'm pretty sure it's Friday, but it was a total guess. And I figured, you know, Friday afternoon, people might take a break and go do some learning. Well, we had to go look for the data, and it wasn't easily accessible. I figured, well, we're recording, you know, where they're coming from, right? No, we're not. we're recording what time of day we had not recorded their login data. So we actually had to go retrofit this data into a new table by looking at their first activity on the site, like what page did they visit, and say, okay, fine, that's equivalent to their login. But so we retrofitted it and found out it was Wednesday. Wednesday's a big day for us for some weird reason. We don't really know yet why. But we have been in this, you know, mode now of gathering data and learning about our customers more and more and more, more than I've ever seen before. You know, the lean books didn't lead me there. The XP books didn't really fully lead me there. Lean Startup has. Lean Startup has been made it crystal clear that there's failure at every turn. And you've really got to stay focused on some important metrics and some really important objectives and spending lots of time just talking to people to figure out where you're going wrong. It's fail fast applied to the product.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, I guess I'm just wondering whether it's because you've been on that journey that it's just the next logical step. Like you mentioned, we went to continuous deployment, and then you're almost at that what next because you're already in that loop. So I kind of see the Lean Startup as being two things. If you're starting a new company from scratch, if you're in that luxury, well, you just start with that in mind. For everybody else, it's kind of like, well, you've got to get out of the rut that you're in. And, you know, obviously, for people like us who are in the Agile community, it's a logical step. But I suspect that there's people, you know, somewhere in the middle of this domain, somewhere, you know, the big, you know, Fortune 500 companies who are struggling to make this change. And it must be an awful mindset for them to...
It's just an interesting name in itself, Lean Startup. And when you think about it in the context that you're describing it, I'm not necessarily associating it with entrepreneurial startups. What I'm thinking about is innovation metrics applied to the features that you're choosing from the backlog.
Exactly. It's really something that can be applied directly to large-scale businesses without a question. And our customers around the world are starting to apply it. We've been recommending Eric's book. We've been educating them in this stuff, and the more that they see of it, the more they want even our own training to be focused on lean startup concepts. And you're talking about for people in very conservative, very large corporations, where they're learning that there are actually some other large corporations doing this stuff. Intuit's a case in point. They now have hundreds of experiments running live on the website, helping them to determine what to build next. Rather than guessing.
Yeah, so the term startup is not about starting up a new organization. It's about starting up your next piece of work.
Yes, I like that a lot better, right? It's not, it's certainly, you know, I know that Eric Ries in Silicon Valley was very focused on, you know, small startups and entrepreneurial things. But in his own book, he mentions there's entrepreneurs and there are intrapreneurs.
Yep.
The intrapreneurs are the folks inside large companies who need to be entrepreneurial.
Hmm.
Much of this, for me, is moving me towards a new term. It's a term that I wish I had a couple of years ago because it's exactly, precisely what I've been focusing on. I've been giving a speech called Sufficient Design, which is about how to bring a little bit of business intelligence to software design. So when you're doing software design, thinking through, you know, should I go crazy making that really finely crafted over there? What's the ROI on that code? Over here, this is the high ROI code. I should go nuts making this extremely good quality. Having more of a sense about that kind of thing. And I didn't give a term to it until I heard Brad Johnson, the CEO of Intuit, say, we don't hire programmers. He said, we hire entrepreneurial engineers. Entrepreneurial engineer is someone who's as in love with the technology as they are with the outcomes of that technology. We don't want people who are just programmers, who are just focused on the technology, couldn't care less about the outcomes. We want those people that get excited to see customers using the software, to learn more about their needs, to get deeper and deeper into building an awesome product, both on the technical side and accomplishing what the product needs to do. They're spanning both worlds. So the entrepreneurial engineer is, for me, the next wave. Everything that I'm doing now is focused on helping to create those kinds of people. And I may be writing a book on that topic called The Entrepreneurial Engineer. We'll see if I've got the guts to write.
Trademarked.
If I have the guts to write another book, because it's a very, very time-consuming thing for someone with a wife and three kids and a growing business. But it is where I think the direction needs to go, because I want, that's where I see major leverage. You know, mm-hmm. If you bring this entrepreneurial spirit to what we do in software, major great
so,
things.
So the key message is get some metrics, understand your user way better before you even start to do some real production-like code.
Yeah, and have the ability to decide if you should, you know, pivot or persevere. That's the language in Lean Startup. A pivot means, you know what, we're going to change. We're going to change some aspect of our strategy. because we're not really hitting our ultimate objectives. So I either am going to pivot or I'll persevere. And some people, Eric recommends, for example, every couple of weeks having a pivot or persevere meeting, you know, so you can decide you go in the right direction. It might be that you have to change, get rid of some stuff you had planned on building and zoom in on some really important stuff that you now have direct evidence is valid. So your backlog completely changes. Or, you know, a zoom out pivot where you learn that what you built is great, but it's not going to fly unless you build a whole bunch of other stuff. So, you know, you're zooming out and finding a new whole bunch of backlog items on there. For me, it's Scrum or XP are very, in some sense, very 20th century. They were both conceived in the 20th century, and they did a fantastic job of helping us get past waterfall. Now that, you know, it's a decade into, you know, the 21st century, I think we're ready to move on to some bigger and better stuff. And to answer your question, Craig, I am not sure that people have to begin their journey. If they're coming straight out of waterfall, I don't believe they have to begin their journey with Scrum or XP or any of the traditional agile processes. I think potentially I'd like to see them start with Lean Startup as a concept, start to practice doing some of those things. They won't be great at it, but if they start to even do some of it, they may see some huge savings in what they're actually, you know, building or not building.
I guess my point was is that I think I'm just wondering whether it's had more traction because we've been down the journey. Like, it's almost like we've learnt the lessons in XP and Scrum and Lean, and it's just, it seemed to be that perfect time. And even, you know, you take the state of the economy, you take all those types of things, you know, the survivors are the companies that think differently. So
you're perfectly right.
It's not that it's just a new shiny, it's that it's appropriate for the situation that we're in the world today.
Yes. Absolutely, and you're right. We couldn't have just jumped to it. Potentially, we've had to go through this journey to get there and appreciate it for what it is. You know, Ken Beck himself is a big fan of Lean Startup, and if you look at the Amazon.com website, you'll see all these industry giants praising the thing because you know they all realize it's a very smart way to go about doing things.
And speaking of Kent Beck, I'd be remiss of me. I've been a follower of yours for a long time, back from the days where Renee and I worked the first time around. We had the deck of Industrial Logic XP cards.
Yes.
And,
oh, wow. Long time. Yeah.
XP
War. Yes. Oh, yeah. Excellent.
So we've been long fans of that. And I guess just from the XP perspective, there's a lot of discussion that perhaps XP is dead, and I tend to look at it more that XP is more just common sense. I'm just wondering, from someone who's been there all the way through, and thinking that Lean Startup, the thing that always gets me about XP is that all of the methodologies or flavors or whatever you want to call them have come along. They haven't addressed the technical problem. They just assume that there's something there. So what's your feeling about XP and you know, just that whole area of developer craft?
XP is alive and well in that it's as you said, it's absolutely critical. What's different for me is that I don't apply it at all phases of the project. So when we're experimenting, doing certain hypotheses and trying to discover rapidly if something's valuable or not, we're not doing XP. The other day we created a feature fake on our website. It was a fake feature. It took us 2.5 hours to fully, you know, build it, deploy it, get the data, and then bring it down. There was no XP there. We weren't really test driving anything. It didn't matter the quality of that code because there's just some fake stuff we threw in there. So basically, when we are sure, we have evidence that we need to build something that's going to be around for a while, and it'll have high ROI, of course we're doing XP. When I see code in my own product that's not so well factored, right, I say to myself, let's say it's the user registration code. Should I clean up that code smell? I mean, you know, that's what a lot of these books tell us to do. That's what, you know, hardcore refactors said. Merciless refactoring is a term in XP, right? Well, now I'm a little more business savvy. Now I'm a little more of an entrepreneurial engineer. I'm saying, well, I can couple this code over here to some large deals we did with some big clients. That's super important code. But that user registration code, anyone in the world could write that. Just the fact that it has a long parameter list, well, you know what? It's not hurting us. There haven't been any bugs in that code. And, you know, smelly-wise, I could probably refactor it, but am I going to do that? No. So my practice of XP has changed a bit. But I think for a lot of people adopting a natural process or a lean process, it's still extremely relevant. Of course, it's been turned into this concept of just technical practices. It used to be we saw XP as a full set of, and we still do, those of us who had done it in the past, it's a full-fledged agile process. It has planning and it has technical stuff in it, which is why I liked it so much. For me, Lean Startup has replaced a lot of the planning side of it and management side of it, and still what's left are these technical practices that, again, we use with intelligence. We use them at the right time in the right way. Mm. So
fit for purpose.
Fit for purpose, exactly.
Just wondering whether there's a need for. I mean, I just think back to Kent's book, the kind of the Bible on all this, and things like continuous deployment didn't exist when he wrote the book. Or at least not by name. And
yes.
And I'm not entirely sure software craftsmanship really kind of cuts it. That's more about the person rather than the practices. So it's interesting to.
Continuous deployment is an absolutely wonderful practice. I mean, if you really get deeply into what Toyota did with Lean, and that's what I think they did at IMVU, because they just really got to understand it beautifully, started to see the analogies to software and pushed them beyond where they ever were. They weren't beholden to, ideas like continuous integration. We can do better than that. We can go further. And that's what I see a lot of things that happen in Lean Startup, is that it took a lot of what we've been doing and went much further. So for those who want to have more of a gentle introduction to Agile, I think you can take on Lean Startup in a gentle, slow way. You don't have to dive in and do it all. It's kind of feels a little bit like XP on the management side. It's hardcore. You're playing to win when you're doing Lean Startup. And that's a necessity of small entrepreneurs. In large companies, they can afford to have more waste. But even large companies in this economy really can't, in some sense, right? They need to be as efficient as possible. I think, what I see again and again is, we just heard in a speech by Jim Weber an hour ago, he said, he got chewed out for showing that Neo4j would be a much more inexpensive way than this $50 million project they're about to go do. And he got chewed out because some manager had, sunk his whole career on the big $50 million deal and didn't want to hear about Neo4j. He said, get out of here. Yeah, don't bring this thing in. So there's still corporate politics. I don't know how Lean Startup and corporate politics are going to play together. I suspect that...
Probably not well.
Not well.
but they're probably not the companies that were ever going to succeed anyway, even if that $50,000 deal wasn't on the table, right?
That's right. Mm. There are a lot of these giants that are slowly... they're slowly dying, but, they're very successful out there, but they are eventually, creating a big mess for themselves. Mm. So
speaking of giants and companies using organizations using Lean Startup, do we have any metrics out there about... the organizations that have taken up Lean Startup, are they being more effective in the marketplace?
I don't have the metrics on those, how many are actually taking it up, but we're seeing a worldwide growing interest in Lean Startup. And at the last conference, the Startup Lessons Learned conference in California, it was a trending topic on Twitter, because so many cities around the world had video links up and all that. I definitely am hearing more and more companies applying it and finding ways that it's helping them save money by not building software people don't need. So I don't think there's any kind of centralized body that's obviously tracking who's using Lean Startup. It's like any of these processes. It's just, we don't know who's doing what out there. But it's a competitive...
That's probably a good thing.
Right.
Well, hopefully Gartner would be.
Yeah, okay, let's not go there.
I'm sort of grateful that there's no certification yet for Lean Startup. I hope there never will be. Most people in the Lean Startup community feel that way. And it doesn't have the cheesiness that some of the Agile things have taken on that I think really hurt Agile's brand. What I say in my talk on Lean Startup is that a lot of the Agile methodologies, albeit very useful at the time, were really led by successful consultants. Whereas Lean Startup, to me, is led by successful entrepreneurs, meaning the kinds of people who have cratered their businesses, just absolute tanked them, they awful disasters, and then learned, and then so came to some great successes.
A grassroots approach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People that have really demonstrated business success out there are leading the Lean Startup movement, and that's huge.
Cool. All right, well, we know you got some more talks to go and attend, Joshua, so I appreciate your time. If people want to find out more about you, where's the best place to find out more information?
For the moment, just industriallogic.com. Okay. We're redesigning that website. It's got a 1997 feel to it, but eventually we will get to that. So. Yeah.
But lots of good training there, particularly on the XP techniques. I've had a look at the site in the past. So,
yes.
And, of course, your book. We might give that a plug, too.
Oh, we're refactoring the patterns. I mean, it's still the kind of book that it's heavy enough you want to have multiple copies of it. So one for the home, one for the office.
Yeah. And maybe one for the iPad.
The iPad. And you can have one in the car if you get stuck in traffic. So,
Very good. Nice plug. Well, appreciate your time today, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your trip out here in Australia. And
yeah.
Hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.